This is a previously recorded episode. The show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Tell me you love me. I need a good laugh. I'm holy water. You need a good bath. Whiskey and perfume. You had a nightcap. Now how about that? I've got a new friend, a perfect stranger. He's got a bullet with...
This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Tell me you love me. I need a good laugh. I'm holy water. You need a good bath. Whiskey and perfume. You had a nightcap. Now how about that? I've got a new friend, a perfect stranger. He's got a bullet with your name in the chamber. I'm body organ, rearranger. You feel my danger. This time a bitch gets the last word. All your excuses keep coming faster. But your mouth cannot run my blaster. This time a bitch gets the last word. This time a bitch gets the last word. Don't try to lie, cause I know your passwords. Now here's your violent overreactor. This time a bitch gets the last word.
So what's the word that came out of your mouth? What's that you call me when you got found out? It's not your heart.
Welcome to the Nooner Show. I'm Jay Dubs.
And I'm Denise Brennan Nelson.
And we are broadcasting live from PodcastDetroit.com from the Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming in Ferndale, Michigan. And this Halloween week, it's hump day.
Woohoo!
Woo, your favorite holiday.
Yes, it is.
You know why? Because you get to dress up. You get to play.
Oh, that's only
pretend. For Bob.
Use right? My imagination.
I bet you do.
But not for that. Lots of other things. But before we get talking about Halloween, because I do want to talk about Halloween, I heard something and it made me think of you and I want to just talk about it briefly. Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay.
And then do I have a choice?
And then we'll talk about Halloween, I promise. But have you heard about the comet called Lovejoy?
No, not.
This is a true story. Formerly, it was known as C/2014Q too, but it has earned the nickname the Happy Hour Comet. It's now called Lovejoy, and I'll tell you why. According to a study that included scientists from NASA, the comet's been releasing this liquid. Well, they studied it, and it turns out the liquid is ethyl alcohol and glycolaldehyde, which is a simple sugar. And at peak activity, it's releasing, what that is the equivalent of 500 bottles of wine per second.
Is that what you thought of me?
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
And yes, this actually happened back in January, but it's like, okay, so it used to be called like this technical name, and then when they found out it was spewing alcohol, they called it
especially wine.
Lovejoy.
All right. You know what? We need to have a wine called Lovejoy.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that we give out on the Nooner Show.
There we go. Lovejoy. I just think that's amazing that, and there's a whole bunch of scientific, you know, that they're talking about and what this means. I didn't want to get into all that.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, oh, I didn't want to talk over you.
Yeah, okay.
Or above you or whatever the correct word is. We have enough scientific stuff when we bring our guest on.
I know.
So we'll leave it at that. There's a comet out there that is releasing alcohol and lots of wine. So it's called Lovejoy. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Hmm. The only difference is I wouldn't release it. I would drink it.
True.
So
you'd be hoarding all that wine.
I would.
All right. Come on. Now we can talk about Halloween.
Your favorite day of the year.
I do love Halloween.
I know you do.
I've loved it since, well, really.
You wanted to dress up today. And I thought, okay, we're talking to
I thought you did.
You thought I did? No, I'm always this good looking. What do I look like?
A witch.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding. A good witch. Wait a minute.
A good witch?
Let me just explain that. The word witch,
yes,
because people conjure up these evil images, really comes from an old Saxon word, Wicca, which means wise one. I'm serious. This is true. And so
What does bitch mean?
The next time John refers to you as a witch,
yes,
he's referring to the good fortune you've brought him and all your wisdom.
That's really funny. I wonder if he's listening today because I can just imagine.
He's nodding his head. Yes, you're so smart, Denise. That's
right.
Why I call her witch.
She's probably writing it down going, next time I call her that.
I'll just say she's full of wisdom and she's brought such good fortune to my life. As you have to mine, I must say.
Okay, that's a good recovery there. We'll talk about recovery later.
But let's talk about costumes because one of the things I used to love to do was make costumes for my kids. I didn't always make them, don't get me wrong, but my favorite costumes of all were these skunk costumes that I labored over with my mother for Rebecca and Rachel. They both dressed up in skunk costumes, and I called them Mommy's Little Stinkers.
And so, and what do you do for Bob?
I call him my big stinker.
Is he wearing a skunk costume?
No. He doesn't wear a skunk costume. But, I've had some fun time dressing the kids up. What about you? What are your kids' favorite costumes?
Oh, gosh. But they don't really have a favorite costume. Oh. And, you know, they're older, so I don't know.
They don't still go trick-or-treating.
God, I hope not.
Rebecca, our CEO, was like 24 before I could get her to stop trick-or-treating.
Really?
Well, that's a slight exaggeration, but not too far from the truth. And Rachel hardly ever wanted to go trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
You know? But I think it's a wonderful holiday. You know, there's a lot of cool things about it. You know, businesses profit and neighborhoods are friendly and all sorts of good
things. You know, it's a $7 billion business.
Well, I've heard it's second to Christmas.
Well, and I guess what retailers do is they watch to see what the sales are going to be for Halloween, and that's usually an indicator of what's going to happen with the Christmas sales.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so $7 billion, but they're unfortunately predicting that this year sales are going to be down about 7%. So
really?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
I don't know. Probably because you won't let your kids go trick-or-treating anymore. I don't know.
Huh. Well,
but,
that's interesting.
Have you heard of, speaking of Halloween on Tilson Street in Romeo, Michigan?
No.
Are you familiar with Romeo?
Somewhat.
It's a cute, historic town. It's beautiful. I drive through there all the time, and it's all Victorian homes. But they started this tradition many, many years ago, and people come from all over the place. They come from different states just to see all the decorations, and it's Tilson Street, and it's jam-packed. It's it goes on for a month. All the homes are decorated, and they put a ton of money into this. They hand out about 60,000 pieces of candy just on that street.
And this is, you're talking about Halloween.
Well, Halloween is the only day they have the trick-or-treating, but you can go the whole month of October. People drive over there and walk around. They'll get a cup of coffee, they'll get a hot chocolate, and they'll walk around to look at all the decorations because it's very elaborate.
And, it sounds cool.
And it's part of a, like if you are going to buy a house on that street, you have to make a commitment that you're going to participate in this. I mean, it's a really big deal for this town.
Wow.
But it's well known. It's really pretty cool.
Oh, that sounds amazing. You know, I think a lot of neighborhoods get into Halloween. I know there's a few neighborhoods in Howell that they just go all out and they have, you know, people hit, you know, under leaves that jump up and the lights and the elaborate pumpkin carvings that they do.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's wonderful. And again, it brings neighborhoods together. I think the other thing I love about it, and I read about this a little bit, is that it, you know, everybody makes a point, families do, of coming together.
Right.
You know, they get off work early to take the kids trick-or-treating.
Right.
And
right.
So, yeah, it's not bad to have and it's on Saturday this year, so that's even better.
Oh, I know. Well, you don't have trick-or-treaters at your house.
I don't. You don't either, do you?
No, but we do at the parlor.
Oh, yeah. You must get a lot there.
Oh, we do. All the businesses stay open, and we have probably, 400 to 600 kids that
really?
Come through there. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
wow.
a fun night, though.
What do you give out?
All the customers.
Pizzas?
No, I give one of those, like, Jesus Saves stickers. No, I'm not. Can you imagine giving 600 of those out?
No.
Kids will throw them back in my face.
If it was on a, what do you call it, a candy bar.
Oh, yeah.
If you put it on one of those giant candy bars, it would be okay.
No, we give out quite a bit of candy.
Oh, wow. Do you deliver a lot of pizzas that day?
Well, we just started delivery, so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I read that.
I mean,
also,
we're open. It is a very busy night for pizza. I mean, because a lot of families will come in and get pizza because they're getting their kids ready. They don't have time to cook. So, you know, but I would imagine delivery is probably going to be pretty busy, too.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what else do you want to talk about? I've got a lot of things on my list.
I know you do. Well, actually, listen, did you read Skim this morning?
I did not.
Okay.
I ran out of time.
You got me hooked on that newsletter. The quote of the day, and I was thinking about you here, constant hustle. The Michigan football coach, Jim Harbaugh's strategy for trick-or-treating. Yesterday, he said that he tells his kids to change Halloween costumes to maximize their candy potential.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. It was the quote of the day on the Skim newsletter.
Wow, that doesn't seem right.
Why not? It's game day for him every day.
Oh, okay. So you mean he tells...
His kids.
His own? Does he have little kids?
Oh, I guess.
Oh.
It said his kids.
I don't know. He seems too old to have little kids.
He doesn't look too old.
Okay. It's just me. Okay, I have a question for you. Would you rather?
Oh, no. Oh, see, okay, no. That's not fair. That's not fair, because you said it at the end of the show, so I'm not giving you a dollar.
But this has to do with Halloween.
I don't care. I'm not giving you a dollar.
All right,
I know
Jessica,
what you're trying to do.
You answer this question. Ready?
Wait, I wasn't involved in this bet.
Would you rather swim 2 minutes in a vat of blood or hang upside down for 8 hours?
Oh, my God. Both of those sound really terrible.
But you have to pick one.
I don't want to swim in blood, so I'm going to go with hang upside down, and I'm just going to keep doing crunches. So I'll get a workout while it's happening, and the blood will even out somehow.
I would hang upside down, too, but I'd probably go into a coma.
Yes. All that blood in you.
There's no way I would do a workout.
You would just have to grab your ankles and pull yourself up. And, you know.
That sounds
easy. She's like, I'll get right on that.
Yeah, I'd swim in the vat of blood for 2 minutes.
Yeah, that wouldn't
be
easy, but.
You would?
Well, I don't want to hang for 8 hours?
Yeah, you're right.
You're gonna
I'd
get
die.
Blood in your nose and your ears.
I'll plug it.
And your, all of them?
What's not, you don't have to put your head under blood,
right?
Do you?
And your hair.
Good point, Jackie.
Yeah, you owe me a dollar now.
We had a bet before the show. All right, so.
Was that it?
Well, I've got a bunch, but I'm going to save them throughout the show.
So, listen, tomorrow night, we are going to be guests on the Five Gear Show right here on Podcast Detroit. With Stone Perkins. Can you tell us anything about that, Jess, what we can expect tomorrow?
It'll be music and just playful banter and talking and joking, whatever stories he has pulled up or whatever for tomorrow. I don't even know because I haven't talked to him so far this week. So I should probably find out today, huh?
Starts at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock to 11 tomorrow. But yeah, he knows we're old and we can't drive past like
9:30,
10 o'clock.
Age, I think, is a state of mind. I know some 30-year-olds that act 60 and some 60-year-olds that act 30. So
and where do we fall in that category there or that description?
We're part you of don't act your 30s. Age.
We're part of the means, new 30s.
Yeah, okay. I'll go with 30s. We are the that new seems 30s. About right.
We will be on at 9 o'clock until we don't have anything left to say. We'll be there, right, Jack?
So they'll be leaving at 11.
No. Yeah, really. We're going to have to run over.
We'll be going till 11:30 tomorrow.
Oh, he has It'll no idea fun. What he's getting into.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, no, he's looking forward to it.
He's a cool guy.
You know, people have to have really crappy taste in people to not like the two of you. So,
aww.
You're nice, you're funny.
Let's give her
and,
that dollar.
I mean, at the open house.
I'm give you that dollar.
You even brought food. Like, nobody else did that. Everybody showed up to drink the booze. And
Jackie's
pizza,
homemade pumpkin
which
roll.
Which is what it was for. But, yeah, it was good.
It was really good. Yeah. Really good. Now, wait. Don't you think we should dress up tomorrow night? For the show, for
okay,
five
so
years.
What do you want to be?
Well, I wanted to ask you,
what?
If you and John went to a Halloween party, what famous couple would you dress up as?
Well, he dresses up like Hugh Hefner every week. So, you know, he walks around with a robe, a cigar, and a drink.
And what does that tell us you dress up as, Jack?
No, I'm not included. Do you see anybody like me and Hugh Hefner? No.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Gorgeous.
No, let's see. What would we...
What famous couple?
What famous couple?
Becca and AJ dressed up one year as... Well, you're thinking about that. And I thought this was adorable, but as Fred and Wilma.
Oh.
That was cute.
It was really cute.
Oh, okay.
And I, one of these years, I would like to dress up, Bob and I should dress up as Ricky and Lucy.
Oh, there you go.
Because he calls Lucy, Lucy.
That fits you.
I know. Well, no. She's a little dingy. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but she always finds a way.
I know she does.
Yeah, that's part
like
of me
Lucy.
You're thinking of. Yes.
Okay,
would you rather deliver a baby elephant or a baby human?
Oh, elephant.
Really?
I would be scared, to deliver a human.
I'd be in pain watching that elephant deliver a baby elephant. Ooh, ah.
Well, you don't have to do anything. You just stand
just
there
have
and
to
catch
pull it out.
And then spank it.
I want to deliver a baby human.
Do you really?
Yeah. I saw this on, I think it was Channel 4 News. They were doing this Would You Rather, and I'm like, I have that game. So I pulled it out, and I was going through all these cards, and that's why I'm asking you these questions. I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to get to know each other better.
I think we know each other enough.
All right, one more. Would you rather be hit by lightning or bitten by a shark?
Oh, I think, oh, gosh, I don't know, hit by lightning. What about you?
I think so.
Hit by lightning?
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely.
Jessica?
Definitely lightning. I know people have been hit by lightning and they're not, you know,
they're
drooling
fine.
On themselves. You get bit by a shark, you lose the limb. So there's that.
Unless it's a baby shark.
Still, nope, not worth it. I'll take lightning.
All right. Okay, good. Well, we'll save some more for later because I know you're loving this, Jackie.
No, you cheated, though. But we won't go there.
All right.
What else do you have?
Why did the vampire need mouthwash?
Oh, God. I don't know. Here we go with your jokes. You said it was knock-knock.
She had bat breath.
Oh, jeez. It's a she?
Well, there's vampire girls, right? Or vampirists, I guess, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, I think we should bring our amazing guest on. How about that? I do, too. All right.
I do, too. Now, the segment is What's the Wish, What's the Way, and What's in the Way? And this is our favorite part of our show, actually, because this is the show where we get to explore the stories, listen to the stories about the people that go through different struggles, different setbacks, and how their setbacks become their comebacks, and how their faith overcomes their fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so our guest today
is Tom Dukes. 6 years ago, Tom Dukes was a healthy and happy father and businessman living and enjoying his life when it threw him a curve. He contracted a bug known as gram-negative ESBL E. coli, or I think simpler put, Tom, superbug.
Yes.
And you can, correct me if I've say anything incorrect. It ravaged his body and it tore his life apart, and he's going to talk about that today. At one time, and I don't know, I wasn't able to confirm this, he was the only known survivor of this rare E. coli superbug. Tom has appeared on CBS News with Katie Couric, the doctors, a movie trailer for a book that I read and is wonderful, Rising Plague. His story has been written about in the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune, and many of these stories have been syndicated all around the world. Also, in 2010, Tom spoke at a congressional briefing about the need to develop new antibiotics, along with Dr. Spellberg, who wrote Correct. The book Rising Plague. So, welcome, Tom. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
This is a fascinating story, and I guess my first question for you is, why don't you tell us, you know, take us back to what happened?
Well, it started in 2009, and I didn't really contract, and I'll kind of clear that for you a little bit. I had a thing called diverticulitis, which I didn't know. I had an attack in 2009 in August, and it was a real kind of a crampy thing, and I didn't really know what it was all about, so I waited until Monday to go to the doctor and got some antibiotics, and it took care of it in no time. And they basically said you really need to modify your diet, because diverticulitis are little pockets in your intestine, mainly your colon, and things get stuck in there and it creates an infection. Very painful. So a lot of people have it, and a lot of people don't even know they had it. So I did that. I changed my diet, got more fiber, and then in December I was at a friend's house and the same pains came back, but way, way worse. It was really gripping, really painful. But once again, I thought, well, I lived through it for one weekend. I can live with this diverticulitis till I get to the doctor. So I procrastinated for the weekend, and by the time Monday came around, I was in excruciating pain. My body felt like it was on fire. And, you know, my midsection, my back, it was just horrendous pain. Went to the doctor, and she diagnosed me once again with diverticulitis. I went and got the same Cipro that I had for the first attack, and started that on Monday morning. And by Tuesday, it hadn't gotten better, but I thought, well, this is going to work. By Tuesday afternoon, I couldn't get off the couch. I had to call my daughter to come home and take me to the hospital. So she basically, you know, carried me to the car and got me into the hospital, and we sat in the waiting room for about 2 hours. Nobody knew really what was going on. I just know I was in a lot of pain, but, you know, emergency, you know, first come, first serve.
Right.
Finally got to my turn. They didn't really know what to do, so they ran a CAT scan. And they took me back to the waiting room, and in about 15 minutes they came out and took me into the back, took my daughter into the back, and said, we have a real problem here. You've actually perforated your colon.
Wow.
You've probably been bleeding and poisoning yourself for about 3 days.
Oh, my gosh.
And at that point, they figured I had maybe an hour to live. So they, of course, at that point, my daughter got on the phone and started calling everybody. I didn't know. I was so sick, I really didn't realize how sick I was.
Right.
And the next hour or so was really kind of fuzzy. I was fading really fast, and I just know that I was laying on a table getting prepped with doctors running around absolutely insane, and I just saw my family standing around me. There's my mom, my dad, and they're all crying. I'm going, I guess this is a little more serious than I thought. And I was in just a lot of pain, and it was just I need this to stop. So I wasn't really grasping what it was all about until about the last 10 seconds when the doctor told me that this is it. You're going to be out. And at that point, I knew I had 10 seconds to basically say goodbye to everybody. It finally hit me that I'm dying, and I may never open my eyes again. It was a strange sensation. It was kind of overwhelming sadness. I wasn't afraid to die. I was afraid I wasn't going to see my daughter grow up and have grandkids. And nobody ever wants to see your parents standing in front of you crying because you're dying.
Wow.
But, fortunately, I woke up in the morning, and I woke up without a bunch of my colon and a colostomy bag.
Now, I was reading, you know, I went through some of the different interviews. Was that caused by something you ate, the meat being contaminated, or no?
No, that's where I wanted to clarify it. The E. coli that I had was basically bred over a period of time. It's not that I ate a hamburger or a sandwich and got sick. It's not kind of what the standard E. coli you hear about when somebody
right.
eats a salad. This, and the, it's they can't say it's a fact, but the main theory is it came from me eating food that comes from farms where they put antibiotics in the animal food, not because they're sick, but to make them grow faster and bigger. So there's many, many farms that do this additive, and you eat this food, and it can be anything from a farm. It could be cottage cheese, butter, milk, anything that comes from a farm animal, including the meat. They've got it pumped full of antibiotics. You eat this, and it actually breaks down the normal E. coli that you have in your colon and your intestine, which is good. It breaks it. It doesn't break it down, but it makes it resistant. You're bombing it with antibiotics for whatever the period of time might be. It could have been a year, a couple of months. That's hard to say. They don't know enough about it to make a determination. But that's what had happened. And when I had the second bout of diverticulitis, it basically, this E. coli had mutated to the point where nothing was going to kill it.
Wow.
Nothing orally or nothing really intravenously was going to work on it.
If they had caught it earlier, would it have? I mean, you said that, you know, like for 3 days you were contaminating your body. If you had gone in sooner, is there a possibility that they would have caught it or no?
No, it had already happened.
Okay.
I just didn't know it, and it got worse and worse and worse. I just thought it was another bout of diver. But by the time the second occurrence had happened, it had already perforated, basically ate its way out.
Did they try many different antibiotics on you, or it was too late for that? They just needed to go in and do surgery.
Oh, it was way too late. It was okay. Way too late. But the thing that they didn't know, and the thing that really saved me, is when they basically cut me open, they took literally all of my intestines, all of my guts out, and threw it on a table and washed it all down. But thank God they had the presence of mind. They took a swab of my body cavity, which I guess is a little more standard now. Because I had been, they know that there's E. coli in your gut, and usually it's good. But they took a swab, and over the next period of a couple of days, they were trying every antibiotic they knew in a petri dish to kill this E. coli.
Gotcha.
And nothing was touching it. That's when, you know, 2 days into the hospital, I was still literally dying, and I wasn't getting better. I felt a little better, but I was missing organs. But I was still sick, and it was still painful.
Now, were you aware at that time? Like, did you know what was going on? And
I had no clue. I was still fairly out of it. I just remember a doctor coming in. He goes, "My name is Dr. Mayer. You're in trouble. We've got to take you down to radiology and put in a PIC line." And this is all still kind of fuzzy. But so they ran me down to radiology, and a PIC line is a basically a tube they ran from my arm through my shoulder into my heart to directly infuse an antibiotic, which was basically just a cocktail that they didn't know was going to work or not. So it was basically just pure luck.
Wow. And that worked, though, right?
That one worked?
I had the PIC line in for about 30 days, and they infused me every day for 30 days. And it was interesting because when that was finally over, I asked the surgeon, I said, "How do you know it's gone? How do you know it's dead?" He goes, "We don't. We have no way to tell you. But you're alive. So we're going to have to assume that it worked."
Every time you get a pain in your gut, do you think, "Oh, no"?
Yes, I do. I try not to, but it's hard not to, because they basically told me now at this point, if there's ever another breach or a perforation, they killed what was in my system. Okay, they killed the E. coli that got into my system, was eating my organs, doing all this other horrible stuff that made it so painful. But at this point, they've told me that if it happens again, we really have nothing this time. There's nothing to fight this.
Wow.
So you basically are not going to make it this time. I was lucky the first time.
So let me just make sure I understand this. There's nothing you could have done to avoid it. I mean, there's nothing you did that brought this on. It was...
No.
Okay.
No, there's nothing I did. And usually people contract this stuff in the hospital and die. And
why is that? Why do so? Because of the germs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's just you're in the hospital. You want to get out as fast as you can. But what made mine kind of an anomaly was what they called mine community acquired, which is still very rare. In other words, I'm just a guy walking around in the street like everybody else. I'm no different than anybody else. But I have it. And I had it.
Do more people have it now? Like, are they acquiring it like you did?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're basically breaking down that, like I say, they're eating food that comes from these farms, and that's creating these superbugs. And the only difference really between me and a million other people is I know I have it.
Hmm.
And that's the scary part.
Wow. So what can you do different then? I mean, you can't. It sounds like you can't prevent it if it happens again. But is there anything you can do different?
Really, at this point, not really.
No.
I try to eat as well as I can, as organically as I can. I try to keep the high fiber. I don't want to create the same circumstances that caused things to get lodged in my colon that created the exit for the E. coli. But for me, it's kind of like closing the barn door after the horses get out.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's really nothing I can do to not have it happen. And there's nothing they can do to check me or to find out if there's anything going on. It's just that's just how far behind the curve in antibiotics they are. They just haven't had anybody live long enough to talk about it.
Which leads us to what I talked about in the introduction. You spoke at a hearing. And the purpose of the hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, was to Dr. Spellberg, who wrote Rising Plague, wanted you to be there because you're the human connection, if you will.
Correct.
To what he's been saying, and that is that we need to develop new antibiotics because it's just part of the process that our bodies become immune to antibiotics.
Correct.
Correct?
Right.
So you spoke in front of Congress. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a very red letter day, I guess, in my life. The reason I like doing this is to raise awareness. And the IDSA, the Infectious Disease Society, had been going to do these briefings fairly regularly. They'd done five or six, and they only get six or seven people to come and participate from Congress and what have you. And that day, they had 70 people there because they wanted to hear somebody that lived to tell about it. And the whole reason was to get a couple of acts passed because there's nobody making antibiotics, basically, for these superbugs. There's no money in it. The big guys want to make the stuff you take every day, heart medicine, Viagra, you name it, whatever the big dollars, pharmacy stuff is,
right?
That's what they're making their money at. $20 million to these guys is not worth getting up in the morning. So Dr. Spellberg's been trying to get these acts passed, which will kind of pair up small pharmaceutical guys with the big guys and find somewhere in the middle to get some antibiotics back into the pipeline. And they're, I mean, the scary part is they're, falling 70 years behind the curve.
Wow.
And it's not getting a whole lot better.
One of the things I liked about Dr. Spellberg's book and the testimony that he gave, or whatever you call it, the talk, mm-hmm. is that he doesn't throw anybody under the bus. That he makes the point that drug companies, they have to make money. That's, they're in business. They right. have shareholders and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
His point is that we need to create nonprofit. We need to have people, that don't have to worry about how much money they're making.
Right.
Correct?
Absolutely. Yep. He's been involved with the IDSA for years, and this has been his life's passion. So he's very good at what he does, and he's very politically correct because he's got very strong, standards that he lives by, and he likes to try, and he does a great job of portraying that, and he gets it out in his book. Everybody can understand it, and he's not talking down to you. He's talking to you.
And he offers solutions. But here's I guess the question Jackie and I want to know. What happened? That was in 2010.
Correct.
So have those acts been passed? Has anything changed? Are there nonprofit groups that are now coming together, or has the government set up groups to create new antibiotics that you know of?
Not that I know of. The only thing I do know is that one of the acts was the GAIN Act, and I forgot what the acronym is. But that did pass, and he did tell me directly because of our involvement with Congress and my speeches.
Gain?
My speech, yes.
G-A-I-N.
And you can go to the IDSA, the Infectious Disease Society of America's website, and if you type in bad bugs, no drugs, you can read all about it. The STAR Act has failed, which was another attempt to get pharmaceuticals online to get drugs made. And the only other thing that has happened, I think, in the last year was the FDA finally has come out and said that antibiotics in animal food is harmful to human beings.
And you're seeing more foods that say antibiotic free.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Which is a good thing, because I've read that 80% of the antibiotics that are created go to our animals. Is that?
Absolutely. 70 to 80% go to go to the farms and the animals. Mm-hmm.
That's really scary. No wonder we're immune to antibiotics now. I know Cipro personally doesn't work for me anymore. And is that something that they put in food?
No, and I don't know exactly what the animal what the actual antibiotics are.
Right.
But they're still doing a number on us, and it's not getting any better.
That's really scary. Because then, you know, if you get something serious like you had, there's nothing to treat it. Because your body's already immune to all these things because you ingest it on a daily basis.
Absolutely. And with women with urinary tract infections, you know, Dr. Spellberg has come out, and especially in the Katie Kirk interview, that there's literally going to be tens of thousands of women admitted to the hospital because the antibiotics are not going to work anymore. It's such a simple process that should be able to be taken care of. And with all of the things we're doing to ourselves and every, you know, things that are being put in our products that we eat and drink, it's killing us. It's literally killing us slowly.
And definitely scary.
Dr. Spellberg talks about, and it's true of a lot of things, that we take antibiotics for granted. I mean, penicillin was created, I'm not sure what year. I'm certainly not an expert on any of this, and I don't. We don't mean to be either.
Right.
But that we take them for granted. And like you said, for simple things as strep throat or a urinary tract infection or whatever it might be, we've just always assumed, you know, if I have a bacterial infection, I can take an antibiotic and we'll take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
But unless, you know, we do something, I guess my biggest question is, what can we do about it? I feel like...
Well, what I'm hearing, though, is I don't think that we are taking advantage of the antibiotics. I think because it's in the food and everything else, I mean, we're not... We can't really avoid it unless, you know, growing your own.
Bio-organic.
Well, even organic, is that really...
Antibiotics in it sometimes, too. I mean, there are local places. My uncle grows cows out in Imlay City. I know there's a couple places in the Troy area where they raise chickens. So, I mean,
but I'm just saying
markets,
to have a shift in, you know, a paradigm shift and everybody starts doing that. I mean, think about it.
It's awareness. I mean, it's all about awareness.
And when I say we take it for granted, I don't mean individuals. I mean as a country, as a world, really.
That's interesting as the world. I wonder if it's different, like in Europe where, you know, if they have that same problem because... You know, a lot of their food, they farm and it's natural and it's all about home.
It's worldwide, but it's absolutely worldwide. But they've just really kind of started tracking it here, not in the too distant past. You know, and one of the other problems in the U.S. is for years the doctors have been over prescribing. That's been a big, big issue. And now you may notice that if you go to the doctor, They're more reserved now, which is good.
They are.
This has helped. A lot of this awareness is helping the doctors realize, God, we don't need to over antibiotic everybody because this is what's happening. So they're becoming aware as we are.
Right.
What Dr. Spellberg, I thought that was the big problem, that it was over prescription or over prescribed. What Dr. Spellberg said that caught my attention was that antibiotics have a useful lifespan, and none of them will live forever or will work forever.
Right.
And so it's the prolonging of their useful life. That's why we have to not take antibiotics too much. But we're still behind the eight ball, if you will, because there aren't enough doctors or groups or drug companies that are working on creating new antibiotics
enough money is going into the research and development.
Well, because said, if you take an antibiotic for 7 days, there's not a whole lot of money in that. But if you take a cholesterol medicine or a blood pressure medicine, you may take that for the
forever.
Rest of your life.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about your relationship with Dr. Spellberg, because you guys used to work out together, right?
Correct. Yes.
And you worked out with him like for 10 years prior to all of this happening. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because I find this whole story just fascinating on many different levels. One, you were working or you were you worked out with them, sounds like every day, for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Did you have conversations at all about...
Superbugs?
Yeah, superbugs or E. coli ever.
Never. No. Never.
And here's the other thing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I looked up to see when his book was published, originally published, and it was the same year, The Rising Plague was published in 2009, the same year when all this happened
exactly.
to you.
Exactly.
I thought, okay, that's weird.
Connect the dots.
It was
keep
very,
going.
There was a lot of karma involved. You
right.
know? You know, because I knew Brad was an infectious disease specialist, but that really didn't mean anything to me.
Right.
You know, it really didn't. And we worked out in the morning from, you know, like 3:30 in the morning till 5:30. And just did this over a period of years. And I would harass him horribly. He just, great guy.
You had a nickname for him, didn't you? Some type of disease. I can't remember what I read.
Infectious D.
Yeah.
That was my L.A. term for Brad, which he really D. loved.
Your gangster term?
Yeah, exactly. He loved that. Not.
Yeah.
But I was
sure.
not going to be dissuaded. I'm, you know, he put up with me. Let's put it that way. And that's what made it so interesting is that our friendship had grown, and I knew a little bit about what he did, but not a lot.
Right.
And then when this whole thing happened, to find out that he had written Rising Plague, and it dealt with exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
And to have – and that's when he pulled me into his world. He mentioned something to me when I was back at the gym. I still had a colostomy bag and staples. He said, you know, now that I know what's happened to you, don't be surprised if I ask you to go to Washington with me and speak to Congress. I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. For what? You know, I didn't really realize the whole scope.
Right.
And he goes, you don't realize what you had or how lucky you are. I said, no, it really took a long time to internalize it because you just – it doesn't register as that.
And right. What are the chances that
– I know.
The only known survivor of this E. coli bug would work out for 10 years
with the guy who's
writes this book about the need for more antibiotics. This is that whole – what we talk about all the time, the connecting the dots. Like,
right. Hello,
you don't know what is you're doing it, but all
right.
of a sudden, like, okay.
Right. Well, and why would Tom why would that even cross his mind?
Right.
You were healthy. I mean, you work out.
Which is a big part of this story, too, don't you think, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. And it was working out that actually helped save my life. They've said in no uncertain terms, if I was a 52-year-old guy, you know, basically kind of average, not in good shape, probably would not have made it. It was just the fact that I'd been working out for years and years and years, you know, tried to stay healthy, tried to do everything as best I could.
Right.
But without that, even with the concoction they gave me, I probably would not have lived. So it's mm-hmm. been a lifestyle, and it will always continue to be that.
Yeah.
So what's your wish?
My wish, well, it's to basically raise awareness, get the story out there, let people know where they can go to learn about this. You know, Brad's book is fantastic. The IDSA website, the Infectious Disease Society of America's website, is fantastic. There's a lot of information, and it's sad because there's a lot of dead kids, young adults, you know, younger than me that didn't make it.
Wow.
And that's just how scary this is. They didn't all have E. coli. There's about three other big superbugs, but
MRSA, isn't that one of them? Or
MRSA is one. It's a little more controllable, but yes, it is.
What about the Monsters Inside Me? What is that?
Well, that's the show that I did for Animal Planet called Monsters Inside Me. It's it just deals with really horrible things. I don't know if you've seen it. It gets pretty graphic, but it got the word out, and it was interesting because I didn't know exactly what was causing my pain. And when I watched the show, my Dr. Mayer was actually involved with the whole program. And it was basically the E. coli that had gotten out of my colon was eating my organs, which I never really put together, is eating all my vital organs, which was basically what was killing me.
Now, how long do they think that was going on?
Could have been 3 to 4 days.
Oh, three to
from the time it started, which was on a Friday until, Tuesday.
You went in. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about the book you're writing.
Well, we're trying to write a book. Brad Spellberg and I started to do this book, and it's basically my story from beginning to end, and Brad's wish is to get this published. Hopefully we can finish it. He's in Los Angeles. I'm in Michigan. We're both busy. We're doing things. It's been about halfway done. And our wish is to get it published and have it in terms where people can understand how serious this is. I mean, he wants my story out there because I'm here to talk about it, but he right. wants his point out there as well, which is raising the awareness, getting people to understand what it's all about and make it simple to grasp, you know, easy to put your arms around.
Well, which he does and you do as well. I agree, right. having that human connection and knowing somebody that went through it and all of that.
Well, and I think, too, hopefully being able to, get money for research and development, because that's really what needs to happen.
Right.
Because even if we're aware of it, there's nothing we can do, really. It sounds like they need funding for this. Last week after our show, we were having our sip on this, and as you can imagine, after a bottle of wine, we were talking about mortality, and we had a very deep discussion. And in your manuscript, I just want to read, I'm sure you caught this too, but this was really interesting. It says, "In the blink of an eye, I went from Christmas shopping to nearly dying. It dawned on me, lying in that bed the moment I awoke from surgery, how fragile life is. In a quick second, life can change, and you can have no control over it. I've always been the guy who felt that I'm in control of my own destiny," which that was a discussion we had last week. We were talking about it because unless something like this happens, you don't realize that you're really not in control.
Exactly. That brought me back to earth. You always think you're immortal. This will never happen
right.
to me. You know, none of this stuff ever happens to me.
So what has changed in your life? What's different now that you think this way?
Well, I think it's just more of a love for life and a want to do things that I haven't done. When I was laying there, I asked God for 10 more seconds of awareness. And at that point, I went, I don't have it. That's, honest guys, it's the strangest feeling you'll ever have, knowing that I don't have 10 seconds left, maybe to live, you know, when I close my eyes. And I thought, boy, did I waste a lot of time.
You did? You thought that?
Absolutely. That was one of my last thoughts. God, I wasted a lot of time, and I'm going to miss everybody.
Oh.
And that's one of the reasons I stayed in California, and my sister and I took care of my parents, and they've passed away. And I'm a Michigan native, and I thought, you know,
life's
way too short. I'm coming home. This is where I want to be. This is where what I want to do.
I'm ready to break into song.
What?
Don't say it's Kumbaya.
Yeah. You are not going to start singing and ruin this moment.
I almost did, and I bit my tongue. No, I'm serious.
Wow.
I'm moved. No, you know, and that's the question I was also wanting to ask is what's changed, and when you're faced with death. And our last week's guest, same thing, you know? What changes? Well, how do you wake up every day? And if we could all keep that in the forefront of our minds, you know, that time is not endless.
Well, what would we do different, and how would we live?
Right.
And the only thing that's really important are family and friends. I mean, that's really what, when it was almost over, that was my last thought. I thought about nothing else. Nothing else mattered. I had a friend in California ask me when I was out of the hospital, he goes, "So did you think about, like, you know, what are you going to do with your car? What's going to happen to your car and your house?" I said, "Well, guess what? My car and my house didn't come to see me in the hospital."
Right.
I didn't. He goes, "You didn't think about it?" I said, "Not for a split second. That never entered my mind. It was like family and friends, and that's all that was left."
Right. Isn't that interesting that's what your friend would ask you? But see, I wonder if he was laying there dying.
Well, he wasn't, right.
No.
When you're not dying.
Exactly.
Well, I can't imagine ever thinking that.
I thought, how sad to even think.
Yeah, your car.
You would think about your material stuff. Because,
right.
But I guess for me, it just brought it all into focus. Made it really, really clear what's important in life and what's not.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what does your daughter think? I mean, does she live now with the same ideals that you have about life and death and mortality? And
I think it's changed her. To a certain point, but she's young. She's 25. She's got two children with another one on the way. She's in the Air Force.
Congratulations!
Yeah.
And she's in the Air Force.
She's
good
in
for
the
her.
Air Force.
Yeah, good for her.
And I mean, that was a big day, though. I saw my daughter grow up that day when I called her and said, "I can't get off the couch. Something's really bad. Something's wrong." She came home in about 10 minutes from San Pedro. It's about 20 minutes away, and she was there in a hot minute. I mean, she literally helped pick me up, get me in the car, take me to the hospital. And as soon as she found out, she knew sooner than I did how serious it was. I wasn't getting it. She got on the phone and called everybody.
Wow.
I mean, but this was my little 17-year-old, you know, brat to a certain extent.
He didn't say that.
But she grew, well, she'll admit it. She'll absolutely admit it. She has no problem with that. She's
a
redhead.
She was 17, though. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
But she grew up that day.
Yeah.
I mean, I could not believe how she just jumped in and took over. So I was very, very proud of her.
What's her first name?
Ashley.
Ashley.
Wow.
Yeah, good daughter, Ashley. Wow.
Absolutely.
All right, well.
So what's your, you still talk to Brad, Dr. Brad?
Not as much as I was late. I would like to.
Yeah.
You know, he's very busy. I believe.
And what's he doing?
I believe he's head of the USC Medical Center. And so he just got promoted about a year ago. Which he really, really deserves. So he's spread very thin. I would have loved to have had him, you know, be able to come on the show today and do a lot more clarification on the facts and the figures, because he's very good at it, and you get it. If I can get it, I'm pretty sure anybody can get it. It's very easy to understand the way he puts it. But he's very passionate about it, so I'm hoping maybe at some point we can have him back on. He can talk about the book and the circumstances and what he does. He does so many different things as far as trying to raise money and get the message out there. It's just his life, and he's very, very dedicated.
Wow.
I'm proud to have him as a friend and a doctor.
What a whirlwind, though, your life. Huh?
It's been rather crazy.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You were a successful business person, work out every day, dedicated father. And then all of a sudden you're dying.
Your life's turned upside down.
And then after that, you're jet setting around the country, doing interviews. I mean, what a...
Yeah, I tell everybody, listen, I'm just a boy from Howell. What am I doing here? But I'm here for a reason. I mean, this has given me a purpose.
Right.
More of a purposeful thing to do is to do things with shows like yours, to talk to people, get it out there, let them try to make them understand that This is a horrible problem, and it's no fun dying.
Which is one of my would you rather questions. I know you don't like these, Jackie, but oddly, is would you rather know when you're going to die or how you're going to die? And having been so close to it.
You know, I've asked myself that. I had a friend pass away of lung cancer a couple of years ago. He never smoked. They found it very, very late. I thought, boy, you know, with what happened to me, Would I've wanted that, or would I've wanted it to linger? I still can't answer that. They're both really, really bad.
Right.
But it was hard to see him go through a year of therapy and drugs, and he actually seemed to be getting better, and then he fell right off the table, and that was the end. Young guy, you know, and it was hard on everybody. I'm thinking, well, what's easier? You know, if you're going to die, you're going to die, but you always think about everybody around you. You become more aware of everybody else's feelings, not yours. They seem to, your thoughts and your hopes and wants kind of just go away, because then you just focus on who's left and who's around you and what's the impact on their life going to be.
Right.
But would you rather, now having gone through that and it being so quick and so close to death and sudden, would you rather have more time to prepare to die, to say goodbye, to, you know, have a year or 6 months or whatever to do some things that you always wanted to do?
If you look at it that way, yes. I guess it depends on the process, on what's actually happening to you.
I know it's a tough question.
Yeah. I mean, would I've liked to have more time to say goodbye to everybody? Yeah, and like I said, I wish for 10 more seconds that I knew I didn't have, and that was kind of the kick in the gut, going, no pun intended, that, hey, this is it. When I close my eyes, this is the last thing I'm going to see, which was actually not cool, but it was my family,
was
and they were
family.
There, and my friends.
Right.
And if that's the last thing I see, then okay.
Right.
You talk about that overwhelming sadness, and I can only imagine thinking, I'm going to have to leave all of this that I love. But when you woke up the next day, were you able to appreciate the fact that you're waking up, or were you still so sick that you...
Oh, no, I appreciated it. I when I woke up, I went, I'll be. Because I really didn't think it was going to happen. In my mind, I was set to close my eyes and die. You know, and when I woke up, I was like, okay, I'm a little tougher than I thought.
Wow.
Still
maybe
here.
Just a little. Yeah. Yep,
yeah, I'm
here.
Still here.
And that was only the beginning of the fight. It was 2 days into that, you know, whole stay in the hospital that they found out about the second half of the equation with the E. coli.
Well, I read in one of your interviews that you said, I always thought my purpose in life was to take care of my daughter, be a dedicated father. I'm sorry, I'm not quoting you.
That's very
exactly.
Close.
But then you said, I realize now that there is also another purpose for me.
Correct. Absolutely. So. And like I say, when the karma thing with Brad Spielberg, when he drew me into his world,
yeah,
I knew that this was like part two.
Right.
Part one was, you know, when I was 52.
Yeah.
You know, everything up to that point when it happened. Everything after that has been, it's kind of taken on a life of its own.
Right.
And, you know, due in large to Brad. He wanted me to do all of these things with him and be the live guy to talk about because they've never had it. And that's what's made it actually very, I mean, it makes it better.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Right.
It gives what happened to me a purpose now.
Right.
It doesn't make it all better, but it makes me want to get out here and do these things and get people brought up to speed.
Is it frustrating, though, because you can't, you know, I'm feeling that a little myself. Like, what do I do? What can I do? I mean, how can I, you know, make a change with something like this? Does it frustrate you at all that you can't just make them pass more laws and make them put less antibiotics in our food or anything like that?
Well, it is frustrating, but I know that it's going to take baby steps. There's the guys like Dr. Spielberg that are out there hitting it. I mean, he's the one that's out there, you know, pushing it, trying to get the word out. He's writing books. He must have done Dr. Oz 5 or 6 times. And that's really all you can do is what's given to you.
Right.
You really can't make it happen per se.
I'd like to follow up on this, I guess, and see since then, you know, what steps have, you know, what changes have been made.
But I think just because he's out there talking about it and he lived it, that right there is making a change. I mean, just look at you and I learning about it. I mean, we didn't know this even existed, was an issue.
Right, not to be a hypocrite, but if this hadn't happened to me, I probably wouldn't have thought about it either.
Right.
I would say 90% of the people I talk to have never heard of a superbug.
Right.
And that's like, doggone it. But, you know, when you know you have people like the doctors and Dr. Oz and Katie Couric doing stories on this,
right,
you know it's for real.
Right.
And you know it's important.
Right.
Otherwise, they're not going to waste their time.
Exactly.
Right. And the Nooner Show wouldn't be doing this if it...
Correct. And you know, if you save one life, it's almost worth it. Well, it is worth it.
Right. Absolutely.
I was in a little grocery store. They did a front page article in my local paper, and I was walking down an aisle. A little older lady, probably in her 70s, walked up to me, and she pointed at me. She's staring at me, going, "You..." I'm like, okay, all right. Do I know you? No, she, three times she goes, "You," and she's pointing at me. I'm like, do I know you?
It's getting awkward.
What did I do? Yeah, awkward. And she goes, "No, because of you, I'm going to go get my first colonoscopy."
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's
so
good.
You never know how it's going to get out there,
exactly,
who it's going to touch and how they're going to be touched.
Well, and I just think, it's obviously horrible what you went through, but where you're at today and what you're doing with it, this to me is amazing because, I mean, you're part of what will eventually change, you know? You're part of what's going to help make the big change.
I feel kind of like at the pioneer.
Yeah, exactly.
We're at the beginning.
Right.
Of the movement, I guess,
right,
you would say.
And for some reason, I mean, I believe God, for some reason, picked you to be part of this.
And put you in Brad Spielberg. I keep wanting to say Spielberg. Dr. Brad Spielberg's life. I find that.
I do too.
Really.
Oh, I do too.
It's been connecting the dots. Yeah, really. I never really was a big fan or really believed in karma, but with the Spielberg connection.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. There's too many things. And then he was best friends with the actual infectious disease doctor that took care of me.
Wow.
And that's actually where he found out.
Didn't he make a call?
Well, that's full circle.
Yeah, I did.
Right.
Yeah. Brad, I told Brad, I don't really know what it was. There was an E. coli thing because nobody wanted to tell me. The hospital didn't tell me. They don't want to advertise anything. Yeah, they don't. They keep it on the down low. So he asked me who was my doctor, and I said Mayer. And he goes, "Do you mind if I talk to him?" I said, "No, it's your buddy. Go ahead." So he talked to Mayor, and he goes, then Brad came back to me and says, you have no idea, do you? Like, what? what are you going to tell me now? What's happening? He goes, no, you don't know what you had. You have no idea, and how you should not be here.
Wow.
He was probably like a kid in a candy store in terms of, I mean, wow, I've been studying this stuff for so long, and all of a sudden...
Here he is, right here.
One last question, and then I know we're, as always, we're running out of time, but it's not contagious whatsoever. Is that true?
No, it's not contagious.
No, okay.
No.
I mean, they didn't quarantine you or anything like that.
No, but I'm sure they weren't any thrilled when they were cutting me open and
wondering what all those germs and bugs were going to do in their hospital.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which is why, you know, going to hospitals, you know, you want to be in and out of there as quick as you possibly can, because there's a lot of evidence that there's a lot of bugs and germs. Even if yours wasn't, there's plenty that are contagious and all that. But we don't want to end on that note. This is we're staying on the what side of the street?
Sunny side.
The sunny side.
We're trying, even though we're looking outside the window. It's not too sunny, but it is sunny in here.
Yes.
In hindsight, we should have closed those drapes.
Yeah, today we should have, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tom, for being here.
Thank you so much.
Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
No, I just hope that they walk away with something somewhere. And like I say, I would encourage them to maybe go to the IDSA website and just learn more. And a lot of the things that I've done are on the internet. Actually, the Monsters Inside Me show that I did is going to air tomorrow at noon on Animal Planet.
Oh, okay.
And there's actually three different segments in the show, three different sicknesses, if you will. So, and all three are interesting, but I would encourage people to take a look at that. And if they'd like to go to www.risingplague.com, we did a movie trailer. They're still in the process of trying to get it put together. It's a couple of independent filmmakers, but it's about a 6-minute trailer, which goes into a lot more depth than I can as to what's going on. It involves a little girl that had a double lung transplant and myself. Mm-hmm. So there's two different stories in the trailer.
Okay.
But there's a lot of experts in this trailer that give you a lot of information in 6 minutes.
That's a great, thank you for sending them there, because obviously I'm certainly no expert and tried to, you know.
Probably have Rebecca, our CEO, post this on our page. That'll
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Yes, and we should give a shout out to Liv, because she's going to.
She's listening today. My daughter goes to Central and was very intrigued with your story, so she's listening today.
Yes, we want her to know everything she can, because when we
go to med school,
she's going to take care of us, right, Liv?
Yeah. She probably hung up just now. She probably said it.
I'm not taking care of her, that crazy lady.
And your book, when do you think that's going to come out?
Well, we're still trying to get it finished, so that's still a work in progress.
Okay, so let us know when that comes out, and you know, we'd like to be part of the book release.
I would love to.
Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. Well, on that note, we do end all of our interviews with tossing our cookies.
Wait, don't we need to do sip on this?
I don't think anybody told me about that.
Go ahead.
All right. So I was trying, you know, we try to come up with a drink for our sip on this segment, Tom, that has something to do with our guest. Also, the fact that it's Halloween. So I was trying. My first drink was called True Blood. I thought, well, that's a little bit Halloween, a little bit Tom.
And a lot of Denise, because if you notice, her glass is empty. I love how you always say it's about the guest, and you're the first one to finish the drink.
Well, what's funny is I'm trying these drinks out. You know, I had all these vampire and Halloween. I ended up with it's called Autumn Sangria. And the recipe called for figs and plums, apricots, an orange, a little bit of molasses, a bottle of a light red wine, and then I added some cider. You could either do sparkling cider or club soda. I actually added some cider and then some club soda. So I did both, and I made it last night so it could sit all night. And that fruit that's out there in that container, Jackie?
Yes,
you can eat some of that fruit. And
what are you telling me?
For lunch.
For lunch? You drank everything.
Yeah, good night.
That's all that's left.
I did not.
The fruit.
Don't believe her. I did not.
That's true.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Sip on this, baby.
Yes, thank you for that. It is really good, by the way.
It's really delicious. Really good. Really delicious.
You really have that whole alcohol thing down, you know?
I think it would be a great...
I think you missed your calling
Thanksgiving
in life.
Mixologist, a great Thanksgiving sangria to put. I could see putting it in a punch bowl.
Right.
So
okay, well, let's see what your fortune says.
Oh.
Okay, so we're going to toss our cookies now. We end all of our interviews like this. And when we toss the cookies, the fortune cookies, whichever way the prongs are facing closest to you, that means that fortune was designed for you. So, Denise.
Oh, that one's mine.
Oh, look at her. I think that one's Tom's over there, don't
yep,
you?
This one that? Right here, Tom.
Okay.
Oh, this one's Teresa's. Jess, that's yours. I'll take that one.
Oh, wait.
No, that one, no, you're right. Give that one to Teresa. This one's mine. Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Tom. You can go first. So you...
Well, you want to tell them the tradition that...
Well, we had guests on that said that we should read our fortune and end it with in bed. So. But I think in lieu of Halloween, we should end it with in a pumpkin patch.
I don't think that's as much
okay.
fun.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Tom.
Let me get my glasses here.
Me too.
You'll get more secure and confident in your relationships with coworkers.
In bed.
In bed.
Or in a pumpkin patch.
Or in a pumpkin patch.
That sounds a little weird in a pumpkin patch.
A little ghoulish, but it's okay.
Go ahead, Teresa.
All right. You will be fortunate in everything you put your hands into in a pumpkin patch.
Go ahead, Jessica.
You'll be unusually successful in business in a pumpkin patch.
Oh, God. Okay, you will always be surrounded by two true friends in a pumpkin patch, which is usually where my friends hang out.
So you know what? A bunch of scarecrows. That's who you're going into business with.
Oh. It's all coming clear.
Okay. Or a bunch of witches. Okay,
see, here we go again. Witch, scarecrow.
Mine says, look, good fortune is around you. In a pumpkin patch. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah, here you go again. Recovery.
I'm serious. Now, before we sign off, I do want to mention, we have next week, and I just love so much about this woman, starting with her name, Mary Grace Randazzo.
Randazzo.
I want that name, Ratliff. It's a hyphenated last name. She's a psychotherapist. She's had a successful, very successful private practice in Plymouth, Michigan. She has a very direct, no-nonsense approach. And one of her philosophies is that therapy is too expensive to not be direct. But she conceived of, and she has an app called Couple Counseling and Chatting. And it's been hugely successful. It's the number one ranked therapy counseling app. A lot of media on this, New York Times, Huffington Post. It's been on the CBS and the ABC News. And the one thing I want to say before we go is that all of our male listeners need to really tune in for this, because Mary Grace thinks that men get a bad rap. And she's going to talk about all of that and more next Wednesday, November 4th.
Which November 4th is a very big day. Jess, you know what November 4th is? It's Denise's birthday.
Oh!
I knew
it was in November. I just didn't know the exact day.
Can you get here a little early so we can plan her surprise party?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, good.
We won't tell her.
No,
we will not tell her. It'll be a surprise.
I'm going to surprise you and not show up.
Yeah. You probably would do that. Yeah. But now what, 29, 39?
Yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. Like
somewhere.
Like Jessica said, age is just a number.
It is.
Pick an age.
It is.
Yep.
I can't wait for your birthday.
I'm young at heart, baby.
Yeah, I know.
How old would you be if you didn't know how old you were or are?
I'm okay with my age.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how old I am. I'm in my 50s.
I forget a lot.
I know. Yeah. I really.
Somebody will say, how old are you? I don't know.
I know. 50, 51, 52.
Yeah.
I don't know.
4, 5.
No. 8. I don't know.
Hey, watch
anyway.
It.
Anyway.
Yeah,
hey.
Right.
58.
That's okay.
All right.
So the other thing we do is every week we end our show. We try to end a show with a song that
Denise sings.
No, we definitely don't have her sing. So we have a song that we dedicate to our guest.
You wish.
And anyway, the song that we picked for you, Tim, is it's a rock and roll song. It's by 6 a.m. and it's called Life is Beautiful. So we are going to end the show with that. Then tomorrow night, we are on Five Gear Show with Stone Perkins, 9 o'clock. Tune in for that.
PodcastDetroit.com.
We don't know what he's going to ask us. We're really worried. But if we don't like if we don't like the question, we'll just give him an answer.
That's right.
Some other question.
That's right. I can't. can't wait. It'll be a lot of fun.
I know. It is going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, again, great show. Thank you so much for being here, Tom. And remember, sometimes your only available transportation
is a leap of faith.
Thanks for taking a leap of faith with us.
Thank
Have
you.
A great
hump
week.
Day.
Yep. Happy hump day.
This is a previously recorded episode.